You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respects to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognize their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast on 3CR Community Radio. Today is Tuesday, the 24th of February, 2026, and thank you to the Radioactive Show, which is 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung, and in the studio with me this morning, we've got Fiza and Elena. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are we both?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, just realizing the passage of time, I think, was what we were having conversation about.
Yeah. That makes it sound really poetic. Up here just contemplating the passage of time.
It's true, though. It never stops.
It never stops.
It does not. Seem obvious, but it isn't all the time.
It's terrifying when you actually sit and think about it, which is why we don't do it too often.
Yes, and for listeners, just a bit of context. What what triggered this conversation was that we noticed that it was dark outside this morning.
It counts. It counts as a philosophical, you know, brooding moment.
And I guess, like, when this happens, is there anything that you guys like to do to transition into new season phases?
I like cocooning, especially because it's getting into the cold season. It's getting into the colder season. So, you know, like soups and, like, being home more and just, like, making the home more cozy, like, getting ready for... You know, it's gonna get about to get cooler.
Yeah. I try to do as little movement as possible, like wrap myself up. Nothing can get behind me in my blanket.
Sounds like I feel like we're almost like a documentary, like a nature documentary. You know,
yeah,
like
Fiza
like prepares the home
into the cocoon.
Elena does not move.
Exactly.
For hibernation.
Conserve our energies.
Exactly.
How about you? I think a combination of both. Definitely just like making sure that the home is feeling warm and nice. And also as little movement as possible. Yeah. We're having this conversation in February.
I know. We are like we might be getting ahead of ourselves.
I think so.
It's been a cold summer. It's been so cold.
I don't know though. There was a few streaks of that really warm
days. That's
true. Yeah. I would say the transitions felt a lot less transitiony. Like it's beginning to feel a lot more like abrupt to me, I feel like.
40-20.
And also just like it used to be February and March. It used to be still pretty warm ish before it really gets, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. Climate change, eh?
I know. Who would have thought? Mm. Okay, well, let's have a chat about what is coming up on today's show. At 7:15, we'll be joined by Sandra, who is one of the coordinators of Honk for Housing, an ongoing campaign to stand in solidarity with public housing tenants and to protest the state government's decision to demolish the 44 towers. And Sandra will be joining us to update us on the campaign and tell us about some upcoming events. At 7:30, we'll be joined by Mel from Supertart and Han from Hetslayer. They are two punk bands in Nam, and they'll be joining us to talk about a concert that they're playing at this Saturday, which is raising money for Gaza Mutual Aid.
And at 7:45, we'll be speaking to Kathleen Fine, the CEO of Surfers for Climate, a Western Australian-based climate activist group that advocates for ocean care and protection against climate change.
And at 8 o'clock, we'll be speaking with Tash, the founder of Many Hands Make, which is an arts-focused community that holds different creative events and workshops, and we will be discussing their upcoming event called Experimental Sounds.
And finally, at 8:15, we'll be listening to a segment from Tuesday Home Time Summer Programming, recorded on Christmas Eve last year, where Margaret from Barrack Beacon participated in the daily demonstration at the high-rise public housing tower at 120 Flemington Road.
Yeah, so we're starting and ending our show today talking about public housing with lots of other good interviews in between. So stay tuned. We'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment. Some folks know about it, some don't.
These are the news headlines for Tuesday, 24 February 2026. First Nations activists have announced a constitutional challenge to New South Wales Premier Chris Minns' anti-protest laws, supported by a broad coalition of community justice groups opposing the restrictions. The case, brought by a coalition including the Palestine Action Group, Black Caucus and Jews Against the Occupation 48, challenges the Terrorism and Other Legislation Amendment Act 2025, introduced after last December's Bondi attack. The group described the now-lapsed Public Assembly Restriction Declaration as undemocratic and suppressing freedom of speech, arguing the legislation should be declared invalid for infringing on the constitutionally implied freedom to speak on political matters. Proud Gumbangir, Dunguti and Bunjalung woman and lead litigant Elizabeth Jarrett said, "Chris Minns says police needed to attack us on last Monday night because there was a risk that our crowd would threaten people listening to my song in the Darling Harbour Convention Centre." Ms. Jarrett rejected the Premier's claims that police acted to prevent violence. She added, "We say enough brutality, enough intimidation, enough pretending that policing equals justice. Minns must resign. His anti-protest laws needs to be ripped up. His attempts to ban pro-Palestine slogans and terrorize our movement needs to end." An official hearing before the New South Wales Supreme Court is set for February 26. Also in the news, Sudan has condemned Uganda for hosting the head of the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, Muhammad Hamdan Dagalo, as an insult to humanity and the Sudanese people. In a statement on Sunday, Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs denounced the reception of Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, in the strongest terms and his meeting on Friday with Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. "This unprecedented step insults humanity before it insults the Sudanese people, and at the same time, it disregards the lives of innocent people killed due to the behavior of Hemeti and his terrorist militia," the foreign ministry wrote. Rights groups and international organizations have accused the RSF of war crimes and targeting civilians in Sudan. Khartoum said hosting Dagalo disregards human values. "It completely disregards the laws governing relations between member states of regional and international organizations that prohibit providing any support for rebel forces against a legitimate internationally recognized government." In 2023, Sudan was plunged into a civil war between the Sudanese army led by Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the RSF.
In other news, in the Philippines, same-sex couples will now have equal rights to property following a Supreme Court ruling on February 5th. The decision follows a case where one member of a lesbian couple was granted sole ownership of a home following a separation, despite the couple's previous co-ownership and contributions to purchasing and renovating the home. In the ruling, the court applied Article 48 of Philippine Family Law, which concerns the property rights of unmarried cohabiting couples, to same-sex couples where both had contributed to acquiring real estate. Associate Justice Amy Lazaro Javier urged the need for equal property rights for same-sex couples, as there was a glaring yet unjustified difference in the treatment of heterosexual couples via their homosexual counterparts. This ruling marks a major step towards equal rights for LGBT people in the Philippines, where the same-sex marriage is yet to be legalized. Finally, in the headlines, new research from the University of Glasgow has illustrated the widespread impact of microplastics on freshwater wildlife. The research, which focused on the white-throated dipper, a small freshwater bird, found that microplastics were found in 62.5% of nesting broods. The investigation conducted in the Basque Country in Spain and Scotland did not find a conclusive result on the flow-on effects for the bird's health, which did not markedly differ with increasing concentration of microplastics in their feces. Lead author of the study, Pablo Salmon, raised that the findings that highlight the widespread presence of microplastics in freshwater birds living near urban or agricultural landscapes. Salmon noted that further research is needed to understand the long-term health implications of microplastics on these birds and other freshwater wildlife. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, the 24th of February. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalisation intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
The law is part of our everyday lives, including when we buy something, use a service, have a job, or rent a house. The law can be used to help protect and support families when there is violence in the home or disputes over parenting arrangements. Sometimes we might need to understand the law to navigate specific government systems like Centrelink, getting a residency visa, or if we come into contact with the police. Community legal centres provide free, quality legal advice and assistance to help people with everyday legal problems. We focus on working with people who are experiencing disadvantage, such as financial hardship, family violence, homelessness, and discrimination. Community legal centres are independent, non-government organisations and can be found across Victoria and Australia. If you're experiencing a legal problem, your local community legal centre may be able to help. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres Victoria at www.fclc.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Forests are essential ecosystems, mitigating for climate breakdown, cooling the planet, and preserving the wondrous diversity of life. Yet, they are being destroyed at an alarming rate. Here in the Kulin Nations, logging continues, increasing risk of both fires and floods. The Bob Brown Foundation is calling a national day of action, the March in March for Forests. In Naam, join us on Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m. in Parliament Gardens to demand the protection for native forests. Go to marchforforests.org for all the details, including how to volunteer. March for Forests, Sunday the 22nd of March at 11 a.m.
A 3CR supporter.
Hi, my name is Miss Kinana. I'm a proud Yodiyota, Jajarong, Kalkadoon, and Yirrindali Aboriginal Sovereign Woman. And you're listening to 3CR, guys. Check in with your friends. Make sure you guys are going good. And also stick up for what's right, yeah? Free Palestine.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. First up this morning, we're speaking to Sandra, who is one of the coordinators of Honk for Housing, an ongoing campaign to stand in solidarity with public housing tenants and to protest the state government's decision to demolish the 44 public housing towers. Sandra joins us this morning to give us an update on the campaign as well as some upcoming events. Welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Sandra.
Good morning, everybody.
It's lovely to be able to speak to you this morning. I was wondering if you could start by introducing yourself a little and maybe speak about how you got involved with Honk for Housing.
Yeah, sure. I actually started by hearing a call out for the pickets that were happening in July when they started the drilling, exploratory drilling works in the soil on the Flemington estate. And then it was pretty quiet at this date for a while. We got a call out to get help from one of the residents. And then the pickets, they were doing some works inside the building, and one of the residents called out for some help. And because the works were inside the building, and the pickets really stopped. But we saw a need for helping people or being present and being while the people are experiencing the displacement process, and also to make the passing peak hour traffic aware of what's going on and basically learning better about what Homes Victoria are doing in on the estates that are subject to displacement, because everything is hidden and secret. So that was the reason why we started having a sort of very small presence outside on the Flemington estate on Racecourse Road. And that subsequently turned into, we're present at both at Flemington and North Melbourne, the first two estates, or Tranche 1, where most of the residents have been, relocated. So, yeah, that's how we started.
Yeah, awesome. And so you just briefly mentioned, Tranche 1 and the towers at Flemington and North Melbourne. Yeah. What can you tell us about the current or next stage of public housing demolitions? What do we know?
Yeah, sure. Oh, I'll start. So Tranche 1, originally Homes Victoria had nominated the end of September that all residents had to be moved to their new places. That didn't happen. There's still, I understand, around 30 odd families in the first three towers. There's at 12 Holland Court and 120 Racecourse Road in the Flemington estate, the first two, and then the other. And about half of the others are in the 33 Alfred estate building, and we know some of the residents quite well in there, and they've got they tell us some of the updates that are happening, but the big news in was end of January we heard that Tranche 1, despite the appeal being lost in the Supreme Court at the end of last year, just before Christmas, the residents of that first tranche are going to the High Court in a Melbourne Community Legal are representing them, but we don't know that timing. And the biggest news is that January, so much happened. They applied, so Inner Melbourne Community Legal applied to the Victorian court to get an injunction on any eviction. So the first tranche of the people are waiting for acceptable offers or the High Court case to some time to occur, and that's going to be some weeks, months, you know, way in the future. So this changes everything really again. We're in a long, you know, it's quite incredible that there's 30 families still prepared to stay, you know, fighting on.
Yeah, exactly. It's an ongoing fight, and just goes to show like how essential public housing is to communities, just individual families, but all of us as a collective. And I guess it goes to show why it's so important to have people on the ground supporting, whether that's pickets or Honk for Housing or other events. So you did give us a good description about Honk for Housing and why it's important to make noise, and also, you know, when there's lots of peak hour traffic, just to educate those driving by. I understand that there's another event coming up this weekend. Did you want to tell us about the picnic?
Yeah. So we're having a community picnic and banner painting, sign painting, refreshing our signs and giving also... we've reached out to residents and also the wider people that are interested in public housing. So there'll be a huge selection of different people from different groups, as well, and hopefully lots of residents that are nearby in Flemington and hopefully North Melbourne will come with their families, and we'll be doing, been saying to them, hey, what would you like to say about, you know, the government's, you know, exit from public housing? You know, what would you like to put on the signs? And they'll be having a shared picnic there in the at Leamington Estate, but on the outside of the Gerring Hub, we'll be collecting there and painting big banners together or doing signs. So yeah, it's just a really social event. Yeah. To connect people up. And if some of even the Honk for Housing people don't know each other, like if they're only on the morning and they don't know everybody in the afternoon. So we're going to get to know a lot more people. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, great.
On Sunday, 2 p.m. Sunday, 2 p.m. Outside the Gerring Hub at Flemington Estate.
Yeah, awesome.
Outside of the state itself.
Yeah, and we can put those details in our show notes later today. And then my final question for you, Sandra, is, you know, it is an election year in Victoria this year. So what is something that you'd like our listeners to keep an eye on in terms of the fight for public housing?
Oh, yeah. So, if there's there's various ways to get involved in the campaign, but, of course they've announced all the... This is Homes Victoria have announced all the 7 elder towers. So if they want to get involved in direct advocacy, I know there's groups like 44FU are training up allies to help out with advocacy. There's, you can get involved with something like Honks for Housing or, of course, being an election year, there's... It's going to get very political. We're already seeing housing being really prominent. So it will be very interesting to hear and how Labor and Liberals will respond to the housing crisis and of course, public housing, the Homes Victoria Labor government exit from public housing only exacerbates the housing affordability crisis. Rental affordability, all of that, not having a safety net and not having that affordable for those who really need it, which is such a long way, only exacerbates it for everybody. But, yeah, like we're expecting, there'll be lots of call-outs for different parts of the campaign. There will be so much. It's going to be – we're already seeing, there'll be rallies and all sorts of stuff. Housing's the big issue this time, isn't it?
No, definitely. It is a big issue. And like you said, it's going to be a big year, not just because of the election, but like you said, there's ongoing court cases, injunctions and other updates that we're yet to see. But, yeah, lots of things coming up for the community to get involved in. So thank you so much, Sandra, for joining us on Tuesday Breakfast.
It's not over yet.
Yeah.
People think that there's like, you know, oh, everybody's moved out. Not over yet. And Flemington and North Melbourne or South Melbourne, you know, those ones even relocating right now. No, they're 5 months behind, and there's a lot to go, and it's going to get real interesting this election year. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Sandra. We've been speaking to Sandra, who joined us on the show to talk about the ongoing fight to save public housing. As Sandra mentioned, there is a banner painting picnic happening this Sunday, the 1st of March, from 2 p.m. out the front of Jering Hub, Debney Park. And check our show notes later this morning for more details. We're going to go to a song now. This is by Supertart, who we'll be speaking to at 7:30. They are a sad and skanky girl punk band, giving the people what they want, from Lutruwita, living in Nam. And from their band camp, they talk about the resistance, and they say, "We can't speak about Indigenous resistance and Australian war crimes without addressing the invasion, occupation and ongoing genocide on the continent as well." In honour of that, all proceeds from this song will go to the Black People's Union, a revolutionary organisation that aims to empower Indigenous people in so-called Australia to pursue full self-determination and sovereignty. So here is Supertart with their song, "Lest We Forget the Resistance." You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and that was Supertart with their song Lest We Forget the Resistance. We are now joined by one of the members of Supertart, Mel and Han from Hetslayer, to talk about an upcoming fundraising gig for Gaza Mutual Aid. So Mel is from Supertart. She's also an audio producer of the Sunday Paper and journalism lecturer at the University of Melbourne. And Han is a trans non-binary musician and activist. They work for social and environmental justice and have been playing with Hetslayer for 4 years. Welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Mel and Han.
Thanks for having us.
So I'll start by asking you both about the role that music plays in each of your lives and to talk about the intersection of art, politics and resistance. Having listened to both Supertart and Hetslayer, it's very clear that, politics, social issues, resistance is very much at the forefront of your music. So, Han, I'll start with you. What role does music play in your life?
I've always played music, and to me it's a way to express myself and find an outlet, but also, I guess, to try and make sense of the world through songwriting and put together ideas and feelings and put it out into the world.
Yeah, I think sometimes it can be really, I mean, especially when we're living in a world where there's so much going on, and it can be quite overwhelming. I think, yeah, music as a way to express and to process what's happening is really important. How about you, Mel?
I think, like, music is something that I've always done, but I've always kind of done for fun. And something that I love about Supertart, and also thinking about this, like, with Hetslayer as well, is that I think that the joy does really come out, like, when we're playing together and when I'm watching Hetslayer. And I think that it comes from, like, just kind of being friends and having a great time with your band. But I think also, like, just living your politics and then that kind of naturally and easily coming out, like, when you play, because that's what your life is about, is sort of what comes to mind when I think about the intersection of music and politics. Like, it's important that you're there for the joy, but then because politics is so intrinsic to every part of our lives, like, that's just what you end up expressing as well. If that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we're seeing at the moment, especially people and arts institutions trying to tell us that those things are very different, like politics is separate from art, joy is also separate from politics. You know, we've got, like, movie stars saying that art is apolitical. So I think what you said just now, Mel, about living your politics but also finding joy in expressing yourself and doing that with your friends is really important. So this gig that you'll both be playing at along with another band, Dippers, is raising funds for Mona and a school that she's created called Amal El Mustaqbal. Mel, can you tell us more about Mona's project?
Yeah, so Mona, she wrote a recipe book while she was in exile with her family living in a tent. And she was originally hoping to use that money to get her family out of Gaza, and then her visa got cancelled and that was impossible, and then there was a ceasefire, so they went back to Gaza, although they're still obviously not safe. But instead of kind of getting out, she ended up using that money to start a school. And she started it in the tent that she and her family lived in. And so it started quite small. But now there's about 200 students and 15 teachers, and she's really trying to expand it as much as she can. She's trying to, like, buy food for the students whenever she can. So it's really, like, as much money as she can kind of put into it, the better it's going to get.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, Mona Zahed produced or wrote a book called Tabka that's published by Slingshot Books. I know I found it at Brunswick Bound, but I'm sure that there are other local bookstores that sell it too. And it is
incredible.
We're
actually going to have, sorry to interrupt, we're going to have a box of them at the gig.
Oh, too, amazing.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, just on a personal note, would highly recommend it. It's a beautiful book. And so, you know, this is part of ongoing mutual aid campaigns that we're seeing being organised and run by a lot of individuals, but communities here in Naarm, but of course all over. Han, I was just wondering, you know, you work for social and environmental justice, and you're playing at this event. Wondering if you can tell us about why mutual aid work is so important and why individuals and collectives should also engage in this kind of practice.
Yeah, I think mutual aid is just a really direct way to support communities. I was talking to a friend yesterday about development work and not-for-profits and just how a lot of the money is spent on consultants and, you know, white staff in foreign countries, and, you know, at the end they might just build one well or something. So I think mutual aid is kind of an answer to that, where individuals and communities can just fund directly and give the money to communities for them to self-determine what they do with it. Mm-hmm. Like, we're supporting this school, but we're just giving the money to Mona and she's going to figure it out, what's best for her community. She knows what's best for her community. It's not for us to determine, you know, what she spends it on. And I think it just means that each dollar, which is so badly needed, goes directly to communities rather than getting caught up in the NGO kind of industrial complex.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think self-determination being such a key word there. And yeah, I think that was beautifully put, just funds that go directly to the people who are impacted. And like you said, Han, they know their communities best, so they know they should be able to make decisions about what they want to do with those funds. So the gig is happening this weekend. I was wondering if you could each tell us some details about it, what listeners can expect, and maybe any accessibility notes. Mel, do you want to tell us some of the details of the gig?
Sure. Yeah, so it's at Cafe Gummo on the 28th of February. Doors are at 3 p.m. and it's Dippers, band, and us and Het Slayer playing. Us is super tough. Han, do you remember how much it is?
I think it's $15 concession or $20 full price. And people can get tickets on the door. We should be wrapped up by a bit after 6, so it's a nice early afternoon gig for those who want to go to bed on time.
an important detail to know. Okay, that's great to know.
If we have time as well, I was just going to read out some messages from Mona.
Yes, well, I was just going to transition to that, Mel, and say, you know, to end today, firstly, I just want to thank you both for joining us on the show. But, yeah, Mel, I know that you have some messages from Mona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I messaged her and asked her about this gig, and she was very thankful. And, yeah, I just asked her to send some things to say. So she said, "I hope you'll say that every dollar donated is important and significant to us. For example, I use these donations to pay the rent, and we also provide essential school supplies so we can benefit the students. I hope this support continues, as we need some furniture like chairs, a new classroom, and a water tank. I'm trying to balance purchases with the school's income and donations because everything is expensive. Food prices have decreased, but other things remain expensive due to the border closures. The situation is difficult, but we are trying to continue because children shouldn't be deprived of education."
Thank you so much for that, Mel. And yeah, I think as we're starting to see maybe like news coverage slow, like we shouldn't forget that Israel's genocide of Palestinians and Palestine is ongoing, and what you just described there just shows the ongoing consequences of that violence. So I guess, yeah, now more than ever, it's important to continue the mutual aid work. Did either of you have any last things that you wanted to say about the gig or anything to share with our listeners?
I just want to say that Ruby is here as well, because we live in the same house. So...
Hello, Ruby.
Ruby's from Superstar.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, amazing.
We're just super excited to have this opportunity and to help Mona out a little bit. Yeah,
awesome. Well, thank you both so much for joining us on the show this morning. We will post details of the gig on our social media, on our show notes. But, yeah, really appreciate your time speaking with us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mom.
So we've been speaking with Mel from Supertart and Han from Hetslayer. Both bands will be joined by Dippers to play a concert raising money for Mona and her school in Gaza. The concert is this Saturday, the 28th of Feb, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Cafe Gummo. To find out more details, you can search up the bands on Instagram at Supertart Band, at Dippers Band, and also you can support them on Bandcamp. We're going to go straight into a Hetslayer song. So they are a queer trans punk band playing songs about trans lives and liberation, fighting the patriarchy that is killing us all. This song comes from their latest album, Not My Problem, that came out late last month, and it's called Danger.
Pride Victoria is a not-for-profit organisation dedicated to equality and justice for multigender attracted people, including bi, pan, regardless of label, or no label at all. We organise community events and advocate for better policies and services. I Plus Pride runs discussion groups which offer a safe and fun space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your sexual identity, and provide peer support. I Plus Pride is especially keen to hear from multi-gender attracted people in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to I Plus Pride are tax deductible. For more information, visit our website at biplusprideVic.org.au, email info@biplusprideVic.org.au, or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
A 3CR supporter. I'm bisexual.
Today we are joined by Caitlin Fine, the CEO of Surfers for Climate, a WA-based climate activist group that advocates for ocean care and protection against climate change. Caitlin is here today to tell us about Woodside's decision to drill Scott's Reef for gas. Welcome to the show, Caitlin.
Hey, Julia. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I just wanted to talk to you more about Surfers for Climate and what the organisation represents.
Yeah, of course. So Surfers for Climate is an environmental charity that's trying to engage coastal communities and Australia's 2.5 million surfers to take action to protect the ocean and protect the marine environment against the threats of climate change. So our main goal is to see an end to new offshore oil and gas. And the way that we do that essentially is mobilising Australia's deep connection to the ocean, our love for surfing, and building a bridge between people who usually tune out from climate messages. We don't want to preach to the converted. We see this issue facing all of Australians, every coastal community around the coast. So we turn that combined love for the ocean into real policy wins through our campaigns and advocacy to hopefully make positive change to protect the ocean.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think connecting with the ocean is one of the best ways to learn how to care for it. Could you give us a little bit more context about the recent release of Woodside's drilling plans for Scott's Reef and what that means?
Yes. So this proposal from Woodside is called the Browse Basin Project, and essentially it's a massive proposed offshore gas development off the coast of WA. That would see up to 50 gas wells being drilled directly underneath and next to Scott Reef. Scott Reef is an ancient coral atoll that's on the edge of the Australian continental shelf and sits about 300 kilometres off the west coast of Australia. It's almost like halfway between WA and Indonesia. So this project would not only drill on and around the reef, but then also pipe the gas 900 kilometres back to the northwest shelf for processing into LNG. And, this proposal, they want to operate it up until 2070 if it's fully approved.
Yeah, and that would be, such a tragedy for all the marine life.
Yeah,
it's interesting because it's offshore and, we can't directly see the impacts, but I'm sure you know, all about how, the drilling of the gas will actually affect the ocean.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many reasons why we should not be doing this. I mean, firstly, I guess the climate impact. Mm-hmm. Woodside and its partners want to drill for gas up to 2070. And this project would contribute to billions of tons of carbon into the atmosphere. The way that they survey and explore is through seismic blasting. Mm-hmm. So that is essentially blasting 250 decimals of sound underwater every 5 to 15 seconds, 24 hours a day for months on end. And we know that sound travels differently underwater. So when you're thinking 250 decimals, underwater, this is as loud as an atomic bomb. Mm-hmm. And we know that it can actually kill krill. It damages the ears of whales and dolphins and all of the beautiful marine life out there. So they not only do seismic blasting to explore for where that they can drill, They also will then blast every 5 years for monitoring to check for leaks.
Wow.
Which is devastating because, yeah, Scott Reef is such a beautiful, special part of the coast. It actually has its own genetically distinct subpopulation of green turtles. Mm. It's a feeding area for the picnic blue whales. It's a place that we definitely should not be drilling.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, it's so sad to hear. Because, yeah, I'm also wondering, do you know, like, what the gas would be used for, or is it, like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is also the kicker, is that actually we export most of our gas offshore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, most of this, particularly for the Browse Basin, will be exported to Asia. Places like Japan actually don't even use it, then they resell it. Yeah. So it's not even coming back into Australia, which is, yeah. It's something that that we just, there's no benefit. I don't see a benefit to it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's very frustrating. And what would you suggest that we, like, I guess as a collective, and knowing about this, mm-hmm. what's happening, how can we take action against this, advocate for the ocean? What would you suggest?
Yeah, awareness is a great one, particularly for this project. It's right now the WA. Environmental Protection Authority is moving towards a key decision on this, and there's a whole amazing collective of environmental charities that we're involved with that are advocating to oppose it, essentially. So there's going to be, we assume, appeals of this contested by community groups, so it is going to drag out, but I think it's important just to raise awareness. There's an incredible film called Coral's Last Stand with Tim Winton, John Butler and Brinkley Davies about how special this beautiful area of the coast is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, also you can head to Surface for Climate's website and sign up so we can keep everyone updated at surfaceforclimate.org.au.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think it's so important for us to know about this happening. Just because we can't see it right in front of our eyes doesn't mean that it's not making a huge destructive impact. I was reading on the 26th of February there's going to be like a community gathering in Gannarabub in WA to protect.
Yes.
Yeah. What can you tell me about the meeting?
Yeah, so we just have a community kind of get together at the Common, which is a pub near Margaret River, and you can get a free beer too if you work in FIFO, because essentially we want this campaign to be open to everyone and everyone to be able to feel a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in WA, you know, a lot of individuals rely on the mining industry for their livelihood, so we don't want to exclude them from the conversation. This isn't about, you know, demonising the individual. It's important that we all can recognise there should just be some places that are off-limits. So we're trying to get all coastal lovers there. We're playing a short film and then just having like a really brief info night. That's at the 26th this Thursday at the Common. It'll be good.
Yeah, that sounds really good. That sounds like exactly what we need. Just like having the conversations and raising the awareness so people can stay mindful of these issues and aware at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Awesome.
And our whole messaging is also there's a wave at Scott Reef. So besides being this beautiful underwater Paradise is also an unknown surfbreak. So we obviously know that a lot of surfers would hate to see this wave disappear. So we want to keep wild waves forever and save Scott Reef.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yes. Yeah, I wish I could join, but I'm in Melbourne at the moment. Yes, thank you for sharing. And thank you so much for letting us know more about what Surfers for Climate is getting up to, Caitlin. And thank you for, yeah, raising awareness for this issue.
Thank you, Julia. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye. We've been chatting with Caitlin from Surfers for Climate, a WA-based climate activist group who is advocating for protection of Scott's Reef and the ocean of the coast of Australia in general. You're listening to 3CR.
Up next, we'll be listening to a song by J9, an NARM-based artist, and this is her song, Alea Style. Was J9's song Alea Style, and today we are in the studio this morning speaking with Tash, the founder of Many Hands Make, an arts-focused community that holds all sorts of different creative events and workshops. Today we'll be discussing their upcoming event, Experimental Sounds, a mini experimental music festival held on March 8th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Mix Zoning in Brunswick East. Good morning, Tash.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
I'm glad to have you on the show. To start off, I was going to ask you about What is Many Hands Make, and what drove you to build a community like this one?
Yeah, so Many Hands Make is a community basically about bringing people together through creativity. So I created it because I'm a creative person. I started out my career as an opera singer of all things.
Once was working
people don't know that about me, and they're like, excuse me, where are you hiding that talent?
To have a space to come together and meet other people who are also doing things on their own.
So it kind of came out of a way to create creative community in a really meaningful way. And so experimental sounds is kind of a part of that. And it's kind of come out of the fact that I was trained as a classical musician, and now I do weird experimental music that I want to share with people. And a lot of my friends do the same. And so that's how it's kind of come about. I really just want to create immersive experiences for people to just be a part of and to feel like they belong in this space.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of times, like, creative industries or being a creative in general can be pretty isolating, especially from, like, even creatives having creative friends. It can be a lot of the time hard to collaborate, or, you know, sometimes you just want to sit and make art adjacently with somebody else.
Exactly. You just want to sit and body double with the people around you.
Exactly.
And I think, like, as a creative person, and I know that you're a creative person yourself, so it's really hard to kind of find that really intentional community making and being able to say, hey, I actually need help with this. I need to find someone like this to collaborate with. Yeah. And that's what Many Hands Make is for. We're working on lots of different things to try and connect people together. And experimental sounds is just a part of that. We also do creative co-working where people come together and just sit together and work together, body double, get stuff done, bounce ideas around. And we do lots of other workshops to try and help people to come together and think about creative ideas. Because I think on the everyday as a creative, you get so in your work and you lose perspective.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nice to come out and get some encouragement and some critical feedback from people who are also doing the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really unique outlook on, like, being a creative and doing this kind of thing regularly. And it's, yeah, like I said, can be kind of isolating. So to have people there around you that have a similar mindset but also different perspectives, I think is really, really useful.
Yeah, absolutely. And experimental sounds kind of came about because of my weird obsession with experimental music. And a lot of my friends who I kind of studied with or have met as a creative person or as a musician, they don't fit anywhere, like, neatly in the music industry. And I'm trying to create spaces for people who sit on the fringes to kind of find somewhere where they fit. And that's what experimental sounds is for. Like, I, during COVID, when I couldn't work as an opera singer, I started experimenting with this thing called creative coding, which is a, if no one knows what that is, basically it's you write lines of code and they translate to sounds, or they can translate to colors or lines or art, you know. And so I was using lines of code to write music, and so I ended up doing all this weird and wacky opera and coding, and so now I'm like, well, where's a space for me to do that? I can't go and do that in a concert hall. Well, I could try, but, you know, it's not really the space for it. And so experimental sounds is coming out of that, to kind of, for people who are doing experimental things that really just want a place to do that. And like artists as well, like you'll be painting live as a part of the performances, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, it's kind of to have a really immersive space for community people to come together and just be around other creative people. And I think the other thing that's really important about this to me is it's not just for people who deem themselves as creative. It's for people just to be in community and to have an experience together. Because I think collective experiencing is a really great way to kind of build connection with the people around you.
Yeah, I think it's really inspiring that you kind of saw a gap, something missing in, you know, music, whether that be classical music or experimental music or just in the creative scene altogether. And, you know, noticed there was something missing, and so you create it yourself. And I think that's a really inspiring thing that a lot of people should live by more often.
Yeah, honestly, guys, you can just do whatever you want. Like, you can just make stuff happen. And like, yeah, it's definitely hard. Don't get me wrong, I am stressed, but I am so excited at the same time. Yeah. And you can just make things happen. If you have an idea, just do it. Like, people want it. Yeah. And that's what I'm discovering is, you know, if you're trying to fill a gap, you know, in your community that you see, people probably also see that gap yeah. and want to be a part of that. So yeah, I encourage everyone to make weird and exciting groups and concerts and things, because I want to be a part of them. Yeah. And that's why I kind of created it in the first place.
And with experimental sounds and Many Hands Make in general, what is your goal for, I know that you're planning on doing, you know, this is not just a one-off event. Like, what do you see for the future of this event?
That's such a good question. I think for the future of this event, I want it to be a really, like, almost like a mini festival where you come together with people around you and you become super present in the moment. With experimental sounds in particular, I'm kind of working in creating a lot of different ways for people to interact with the space, be an active audience member, yeah. not just passive. And that's something that I really want with Many Hands Make, is more generally, is people to be active community members and be people who want to invest in the community in a way where you're turning up, you're talking to people, you're making connections. And Many Hands Make more broadly is a creative community. And I want it to be a space where people think, oh, I want to do something this weekend. Oh, what's Many Hands Make doing?
Yeah.
You know, and I want people to think of Many Hands Make and think of creativity, think of experimentation, think of community. And the future of Many Hands Make is lots of workshops, hopefully a physical space
yeah.
Where people can come together regularly and connect with other creative people. Because there are co-working spaces out there. There are other creative spaces out there, and they're absolutely wonderful. And the gap I see is active community making
yeah.
in those spaces, and active permission to talk to the people around you and collaborate, because the creative industry is always under threat, you know, and as a community, we're really strong. And yeah. so I just want people to remember that and come together. And I'm hoping Many Hands Make can be that little void.
Yeah, it really sounds like has such huge potential. Like these kinds of connections and collaborations are so valuable, whether you're a creative or whether you're not. Like the just in general, this human connection is so important, I think. And so, yeah, we spoke a little about the future, but when you started this community, this project, what were some of the hardships that you had to go through, or maybe some of the best parts about starting your own community?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I actually started Many Hands Make in 2020, pre-COVID,
wow.
for the first time. I started in Sydney when I was living in Sydney with my friends who were also creatives, and we had just finished uni, or we were young professionals in the creative industry, and we found this gap of, oh, we want to stay connected to one another, but we're getting really busy.
Yeah.
How do we find that time to invest in one another, still support one another? So it started out like that. Obviously, the big hardship was COVID.
Yep. That'll be a big one.
Yeah. So it kind of stopped for a few years. And then I kind of did all this experimental music that I was describing before. And in 2024, I started thinking again, I really enjoyed that beautiful community that I made. I now live in a new city. I live in Nam. I want to have a go at trying it again.
Yeah.
So last year I started it up again as a creative co-working space. And I think one of the things that I have really enjoyed about starting this community again is just all of the other people who are doing creative things in Melbourne and just giving it a go.
Yeah.
And are just literally throwing things against the wall and hoping it sticks. And it's really inspiring to be in a space like that and to see your community members just really passionate about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I've seen community members grow so much over the last year. Like, you know, one of the people in my community has just started opening their own business. You know, I've seen people publish books or publish screenplays in that time. And Many Hands makes just obviously a tiny little part of that, but I feel really blessed to be able to facilitate a space where people can work on their creative yeah. projects and have that output, you know, and be really true to who they are as creatives and feel seen so that they do have that encouragement to finish that project.
Yeah, I think watching somebody else be really passionate about something is always something that's motivated me. Like, even if I have no ideas, have no motivation, seeing somebody else that's incredibly passionate about what they're doing and what they're creating is so inspiring.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, it's not just one art form either. There are so many different yeah. art forms that come into these spaces. Like, I'm a musician and a facilitator and a producer, but there's screenwriters, there's graphic designers, there's game designers,
yeah.
there's visual artists, you know, there's sewers, there's so many different people that come together. And I think it's not just about the art form, it's about the passion, like you say, and yeah. just feeling that in the space and having that inspiration from the other people who are just making it work around you.
Yeah, I think it's really cool also to be able to connect all of these different mediums. Like, you know, you could have somebody trained as a visual artist could have no idea anything about music whatsoever, but you have that similarity in being a creative and having this passion to make art.
Exactly.
And you don't have to know anything about what the other person is doing, but you have that connection, and mm-hmm. that's the start to so much more.
Yeah, and that's basically what Many Hands Make is. You know, you've literally just said it in a sentence, is it doesn't matter what medium you do, doesn't matter what you do, what it is about is creating community.
Yeah.
And you might not know what the person next to you is doing at all. I've been in them facilitating and being like, I have no idea what you're doing, but how can I help, you know? And it's just seeing what people are doing and thinking, oh my gosh, I am a part of a community. I'm not on my own, and I yeah. can do it because I can see this person doing it right next to me. And that's really what it's all about. It's just being encouraged and inspired to keep going as a creative, even when, you know, it doesn't feel like being a creative is, you know, lucrative.
Yeah.
I think it's not about that. I think there's so many other ways you can find value. And I think community is a big part of that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And going back to experimental sounds that's coming up, what can attendees expect upon arriving at the event? Mm-hmm. What are they going to see? What are they going to hear? What do you want them to do? Interact with people, interact with musicians, artists.
Yeah, so the space is called Mix Zoning, which is a gallery space. So it's a beautiful double height gallery space, and the space, we're going to black out the skylights and we're going to cover all the lights in gels. So what that means is all the lights will be red. Oh. So you'll walk into almost like this womb like space. As you walk in, you're going to be given this little bingo card to tick off experiences as you have them. And if you tick off all the experiences, you get a little prize at the end.
Oh.
And you walk into the space and you'll immediately walk into the music performance space. There'll be a musician playing as you walk in. There'll be floor cushions. There'll be some chairs. Then there'll be a staircase that leads upstairs to this other room, which is a projection room. And we'll have a projection artist in there, and it'll be this immersive, reactive projection art to the music that's happening downstairs. And you can also interact with the projections as well. Uh-huh. We're going to have vinyl up on the wall, hopefully, that you can draw on and be like, make as a part of the projection, interact with the projection, sit and have some chill time. You'll also be able to go out the front and talk with people. And the bingo cards are basically made to encourage people to have those experiences that yeah. I was talking about. So talk to a stranger, heckle a performer in a really affirming way, you know, like find the, I'm going to hide some things around the space and be like, find the five fruit in the space, you know, to encourage people to move through the space. Yeah. And not just think, I'm here to sit and watch. No, you're here to be a part of this community. And I want you to feel like you are, can enter the space and be active rather than passive.
Yeah.
And that's what you can kind of expect, is really you walk in and there's immersion straight away. And there'll be our beautiful live artists, including yourself, who'll be painting and around the space as well, who you can also interact with. So it's going to be really it's not going to be your typical performance, and it's going to be like very immersive.
Yeah. Well, that sounds incredible. I can't wait to be there to be a part of it. And yeah, just finally to wrap up, where can our listeners find more information about experimental sounds or about Many Hands Make? How can they get involved with this community?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a website, manyhandsmake.com, and all of our events are on there. There's also a form on there to volunteer if that's something that you're interested in doing, presenting a workshop or doing something else with Many Hands Make. We also have an Instagram at Many Hands Make, and you can kind of keep on top of what we're doing on there as well more immediately. But everything's on the website, and you can also sign up to our newsletter, which we're just about to start because we want to get off social media and we want people to be able to discover events more easily. Yeah. So that's how you can find out more about us.
Well, that's so great. It's been so lovely to speak with you this morning. We've been speaking to Tash from Many Hands Make, speaking about their upcoming event, Experimental Sounds, held on March 8th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Mix Zoning in Brunswick East. Tickets can be purchased on Eventbrite or through the link in their Instagram bio at Many Hands Make or through their website at manyhandsmake.com.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Up next, we will be listening to a segment from Tuesday Hometime Summer Programming. In this clip, which was recorded on Christmas Eve 2025, Margaret from Barak Beacon participated in the daily demonstration at the high-rise public housing at 120 Flemington Road. Marge spoke to Tuesday Hometime host Marion about why she is against the planned destruction of public housing both at Flemington and across the city. Marge also shares how the actions of Housing Victoria are only creating further adversity for public housing tenants who are a vulnerable community.
I've just met Marg. Hello, how are you?
I am great, thank you. Having a lovely day, lots of honks.
So you're out here with a sign that says Save Public Housing. Why are we trying to save this housing estate, Marg?
Because public housing is the basis of housing for the whole community. We have less public housing in Victoria than anywhere in Australia, and Australia has less than most OECD countries. So there's no reason they should be expanding it. We need at least 20%, 25% of housing should be public housing, so everybody needs it can have it.
Now, have I seen you in a film recently?
Yes, I believe they did a film about our own struggle at my estate.
Bay Views for All.
That's right.
Yes. So I haven't met you before, but I know you from on the screen.
Oh, right. Okay.
So thanks for doing that and for the struggle.
Yes.
And, you know, they had a screening of that here at Flemington.
Yes, I believe they did. Yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we're here to set the scene. So we're in the intersection. We're on Racecourse Road.
And Stubbs Street.
And Stubbs Street. And we've got the public housing towers around us. There are quite a few people still living in them.
Yep.
But many have been, should we say, persuaded to go?
Yes. Persuaded is a very good description.
Fantastic. All right. Yep. And, yeah, so it's Christmas Eve. So good on you for spending your, coming out and spending your Christmas Eve and...
I couldn't imagine anything more fun.
Yeah, it is fun, yeah.
Very uplifting to be here because you see the support we've actually got. And, you know, I'm here because of what we went through on my estate. We never expected that there would be more demolitions. Mm. And I really think, like, they did the same thing with us. They turned up 13 days before Christmas and telling us in 3 weeks' time we'd have to start making decisions about where we were going to move to. And that's what, you know, it was, people were just in shock and yeah. People made all sorts of decisions that didn't make sense for them.
Yeah.
And now they're stuck. Like, they indicated to people, they said, you'll be able to return by 2025. They're still building.
Yeah.
And they've just shifted the timeline out to late 2026. So some of them were out of their homes for like 9 years.
It's terrible. And
they didn't understand that they weren't building public housing. But, I mean, the facts are, in all the estate demolitions,
yes.
None of them have public housing built on them. You know, you kind of judge people by what they do
yes.
rather than what they say. And, you know, they are lying to the public about what they're doing, saying we're building public housing, or you can lie by saying, oh, we're building social housing and letting people assume.
Yeah.
And most people that I've ever talked to, you know, like most people are not that interested in public housing.
Mm.
And they're really shocked to discover that that's what's happening.
It's become a marginal thing, whereas it was the mainstream.
Yes.
So my beautiful husband, he and all my in-laws,
yep.
they grew up in public housing at Reservoir, and we always visited his parents. I visited yep. my in-laws there. It was good housing. It was strong housing. It was near services. It was
yep.
near the train. But he held that as a matter of pride. He was proud of being
yes.
in public housing.
I was born in New Zealand in state housing, which is the same thing. And although my family moved on from that, the idea that you should be ashamed of having been born in public housing just never entered my head. I was so astonished. I came to Australia going on for 40 years ago. But when I moved in public housing, I had no idea that people thought there was something wrong with it.
Well,
you know?
We could see it as a bit of a war on the poor.
Yes.
So where
yes.
I'm from in Northcote, they've demolished the Walker Street Housing
yep.
Commission, and my African friends, they've moved.
Yes.
So this is one that we made up. Tell me what you think of this one. Don't be shit, retrofit.
Oh, yes. Yes, that will catch the eye.
You don't
yes.
think that one's too rude?
No, yeah. Nothing's too rude.
Yeah.
It's just nothing's too rude for what they're doing.
No. Yeah, so at 3CR we're very pro-public housing.
Yes,
so
you've been wonderful support.
Yeah, so thanks for coming out on Christmas Eve and yarning with me. And
these projects are disasters for the whole community because they have... They're done under these special planning laws that is from the state government, and we know from Barrack Beacon that nobody has any control. After, you know, local people thought they were building public housing and couldn't understand why we were upset until they saw the plans, even though there was a huge protest. Yeah, it was just passed unchanged, and there's this concrete megalith going up there.
Hey, there's one good thing though, 2026, yep. election year.
Oh, yes. I I mean, the thing is that they're lying to the public. They are lying about what they're doing. You know, they're behaving like a cheating boyfriend who said, I was never not, you know. That sort of lying where you don't just don't give people information they're entitled to make a decision. So I think it is really important to get the word out. No matter how much I talk to people, there's always one more person that's got no idea what's going on.
Yeah, so. All right. So everybody tell your friends.
Yes.
And we need to keep public housing in public hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, all this rubbish, community housing, privatised rubbish has been done in Britain and Ireland and the United States, and it's been a complete disaster, and they've wound up having to take it back into their hands. So it's clear. I mean, what I think is that the developers can't get their way in other countries anymore, so they've come here to...
It was pointed out to me why they need the public housing towers. They said, Marion, they could buy your house in Northcote for $1 million, but they can't put up 15 stories.
Yes.
Whereas the Walker Street estate,
yep,
they pull down 15 stories and put up 15 stories.
Yes.
So that's what she pointed out to me, that it's licensed to print money. Yeah.
Yes, it's developer-driven. They might be not-for-profits that front them, but they have private investors,
yeah,
that they are answerable to. And that is not a healthy way to... And, you know, they're pushing all the smaller community housing organisations out of business.
Exactly. Yep.
I've got nothing against community housing when it stays in its lane, but,
yep,
but they are literally here.
Yep.
You can... They are building towers right next to a tower they plan to pull down.
I see that.
Yes.
Yes.
They've got a fence around a park saying we're building a park, and it kind of seems like there's already a park behind the fence.
Crazy stuff. Well, yes, thank you so much.
Yes.
We've been listening to an interview between Marion from Tuesday Home Time and Margaret, a resident from Barak Beacon, about the need to protest the destruction of public housing, echoing, of course, Sandra, who we heard from earlier today. And that's all we have for you today. But first up, we have some events that we think you should be checking out this week. Today, 24 February at 8:15. Oh, that's already happened. RACV Club Melbourne. Join Extinction Rebellion, Rising Tide and Beyond Gas Network to protest or peacefully greet those attending a carbon capture and storage conference with banners and placards. Tomorrow, Wednesday, 25th February at 6:30 p.m., Refugee Action Collective is hosting a Unite to Fight Racism Forum at the Trades Hall in Carlton. And this will feature an incredible lineup, which includes Senator Lydia Thorpe, Tamil refugee activist Rathi Bathload, and of course our own Giselle Hanna. On Friday, 27 February at 5:30 p.m, there will be a protest at the State Library Victoria calling out genocide is a crime, protest is not. On Saturday, 28 February from 3 to 6 p.m. at Cafe Gummo, Gaza Mutual Aid fundraiser concert featuring Deepest, Hatslayer and Supertar, which we had on earlier this morning. And then, of course, Sunday, 1st March, 2 to 5 p.m. at Jering Hub Dabney Park, there will be the public housing banner painting picnic mentioned by Sandra earlier today. And after that, pop on through to Brunswick East on Sunday as well from 5 to 8 p.m. for experimental sounds at the mixed zoning area in Brunswick East, as shared earlier by Tash. So, yeah, it's really cool to always be able to, you know, get people in and chat about the stuff, you know, that's coming up. And, yeah, it's nice to be able to see what's happening in the community and share the events. So that's about all we have time on 3CR Breakfast this morning. We started off at 7:15 with an interview with Sandra, one of the coordinators of Hong for Housing, an ongoing campaign to stand in solidarity with public housing tenants and to protest the state government's decision to demolish the 44 towers. At 7:30 p.m, we were joined by Mel from Supertard and Han from Hatslayer to talk about the upcoming fundraising gig for Gaza's Mutual Aid.
At 7:45, we were speaking with Caitlin Fine about Surfers for Climate and the recent decision to of Woodside to drill the Scots Reef.
At 8, we spoke with Tash from Many Hands Make about their upcoming event, Experimental Sounds, held in Brunswick East on March 8th. And finally, we listened to a segment from Tuesday Homeline Summer Program, which was recorded on Christmas Eve in 2025, when Homeline host Marion spoke to Margaret from Barrack Beacon, participating in the daily demonstration at the high-rise public housing towers at 120 Flemington Road.
And that's all from us today. This has been the 3CR Tuesday Breakfast Show. Up next is Accent of Women. Stay tuned to 3CR Community Radio.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.